check it out now. No doubt now.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo Sling Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. It's Gil Alexander. What a weekend. What a weekend. The first ever Super Wild Card weekend. We will discuss all. I will try to remember every single detail. I'm sure I will forget one or two here or there. But I think we're going to be pretty thorough about all of this. And we'll do it in guessing lines format fashion. Not that we're guessing lines. We will guess lines, but I doubt there will be that much of a discrepancy. But it's really our excuse to go back and look at all the games yesterday. Look forward to next weekend's divisional round. And, of course, Bill Connolly will be here as well to discuss the national championship tonight. Bill Connolly, who writes for ESPN, the creator of SP+, the advanced stat for college football. Bill will give us his advanced stat analysis on tonight's game with Alabama favorite over Ohio State. But let's bring him in. He's the star of the show every Monday morning for Guessing Lines. Jason, what are you telling me? Because I can't hear you. What are you saying?
We've got the animation ready to rock.
Oh, that's what you want with his funky little intro. Here it is for Guessing Lines, everybody. Oh, yeah. Non-sanctioned electric guitar. Non-sanctioned by either Chris or me. Yeah. Chris Andrews, everybody. My mishpocha who runs the South Point Hotel Casino Sportsbook. Good morning to you, Chrissy. How are you?
All good, but I wish you had played that music a little longer. It sounded like Jimmy Page or Eric Clapton. That was terrific.
Wait, do you like it? Did you warm to it since last week?
No.
No, I was going to say.
Not really.
Yeah,
no.
Yes.
Nah.
Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin, Eric Clapton. It was not. They really should consult with us on the music. Listen, did the Pittsburgh outcome, let's start here, because my big headline before we get into all this is, you know, one of the staples of this show, not just guessing lines, but just a numbers game, and we do it network-wide, but certainly I'm I don't know if the word's guilty of it or not, but certainly one of the staples is that we go back and we lament, I'll be kind, coaching decisions, coaching malpractice, on any given Sunday, right? Anthony Lynn comes to mind as a big, as someone who's a big culprit of that week after week. I don't ever remember a playoff weekend, and I get that there were six games and not four, but I don't ever remember a playoff weekend where four out of the six losers, I'll leave Matt Nagy out of it because I think his team just stinks, but four out of the six teams that lost, it was severe coaching malpractice sequences that boggle the mind, and I just question, like, what are we betting on? What is this? So we're going to get into all of that, because I don't ever remember it this bad ever in one given moment. I'm not sure if you do either. We'll get your response to that. And then was the Pittsburgh game yesterday, that just make you guys make out with that outcome yesterday?
It was kind of like the least of the evils. You know, we had a lot of, you know, it works out this way. In bookmaking and really just kind of like the way we do the accounting, you always have everything funneled into that last game. So once, you know, we did like the what ifs, you know, we looked like we were in big trouble, certainly if the Steelers won outright. And I had a big money line on Cleveland all week just because I knew that was going to be the situation. They were just a real popular teaser team, and we couldn't knock out anything significant going into that, you know, teaser-wise. You know, so we were I knew we were vulnerable. So I even juiced up the money line a little bit more and probably took back more than I should have on Cleveland on the money line. But all in all, it was still like a good day. We had a good result. With everything combined, especially when you kind of look at it, we lost the first two games, you know, and managed to win the last one, although we probably should have won a little more than we did. But all in all, it was a pretty good day.
Pretty good day. Do you agree with me that we've never seen as rampant coaching failures as we did in this moment? I don't think I'm being a prisoner of the moment saying this. In fact, I would like for listeners to the show today, when you tweet in at Beating the Book, you could tweet in about whatever you want to tweet about, but if you'd like to rank these four guys, Frank Reich, Mike Vrabel, Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll, just which of the coaching blunders this weekend was the worst? Rank them 1 through 4. It's just, I can't believe what I was watching this weekend. It's just horrific.
Well, you know, on my from my standpoint, I know I'm probably I know I'm in the minority.
Let me just interrupt you 1 second just to give station ID. It's Gil Alexander, Chris Andrews. This is Guessing Lines on a Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, and of course iHeart. I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Well, you know, I always just look at team kind of you know, sum of all their parts, you know, and some of the you know, let's take the Steelers. You know, we kind of know what Mike Tomlin is. He's not like a big analytical guy. You know, that's just, you know, until we hire somebody to do that, you know, again, that's just going to be part of what their team is. Same with every coach you just mentioned. You know, Mike Vrabel, you know, he figured out some things last year where he kind of had Bill Belichick by the short hairs, you know, because some of the things that he had kind of figured out that he learned from Belichick, but he was using them against them. But these are all just, like I said, some of the parts, you know, that creates the whole. And, you know, some guys are, you know, real good at that sort of stuff, and a lot of guys aren't. You got to remember the world that they came from. You're talking about Pete Carroll. What's he, like 70, something like that? I think he's 68, something. You know, he's been in football his whole life. You know, this is just kind of what he is. You know, so I'm not sure these guys are going to change, but I look at that and I realize that's what it is. But not to say that they didn't make big mistakes. They did, you know, but that really isn't always my concern, because going forward, I look at that as that's kind of what the team is, like when I'm making a number, booking a game, doing whatever like that.
Well, that makes sense, but I will tell you from a betting standpoint, there is some hope.
Okay.
There is some hope that these coaches do what they're supposed to do, but I guess that's naive of me in this day of age. By the way, Pete Carroll, 69 years of age. Let's do this in the format that we normally do it. And again, we call it guessing lines. We'll guess the lines here. I know that I'm only, you know, because I know what they are now, but I will tell you that I guessed them, and I was not far off on any of them this time. But, well, we'll go through to give us an excuse to go through everything yesterday. Let's start with the first of the divisional round games on Saturday.
Well, the Packers are a pretty solid 7, and the only differences I ever saw, I think there was a couple 6.5s when it first opened up with juice on the favorite, and then even some 7.5s with pretty heavy juice on the dog. I still see some of that, but the 6.5s are virtually gone, or at least on my screen. I open at 7. I kind of like the higher number. If it were to go to 7.5, I could see going there myself. And again, I think people are a little bit prisoners of the moment in all these games. Yeah, the Rams won. Their defense looked fantastic, and I think that's what guys are going to keep in mind in this game. But I thought 7 was a good opening number.
I guess 7.5 here, and I'll tell you why. I was dreaming, like as the Rams were winning this game against the Seahawks, and we'll get into this here in a second, but the Jared Goff possibilities at a cold Lambeau Field were at least worth the tick above the 7 for me, because we've seen him in cold weather. Again, there was just used one example, the Monday night game in Chicago, where it was only 32 degrees Fahrenheit and the California kid acted like it was 32 below, like he was just in over his head. So the Rams get here to play the number one seed Packers, obviously by beating the Seahawks. They do it 30-20. Akers had 131 yards for the Rams. Darius Williams, the big play when he returned Russell Wilson's pick, 42 yards for a score. Rams won at 30-20. Even while missing Aaron Donald, their all-pro tackle for much of the second half. He left with a rib injury. And they did it without a healthy quarterback for, you know, more than three quarters. John Wolford started for the second straight week, but he injured his neck when he dived headfirst in the first quarter, was hit in the helmet by Jamal Adams' shoulder. By the way, they picked up the flag. My immediate comment was, oh, I bet they picked that up if that's Tom Brady. Like, there's just no chance they pick up that flag. But it's John Wolford, and so they pick it up. It didn't seem like it was that bad of a hit, actually. It wasn't targeting. Goff took over less than 2 weeks. Less than 2 weeks after undergoing surgery on his right thumb. He ends up, Goff does, 9 of 19 for 155, one touchdown, no picks, sacked twice. Wolford, 3 of 6 for 29 when he was in there, no touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked once. Akers, as I mentioned, 28 carries for 131 and a touchdown. The Rams finished with 164 yards rushing in this game against Seattle. They were 3 of 15 on third down, but they held Seattle to 2 of 14 on third down. They also held Seattle to 11 total first downs in the football game. Wilson, and what a shell of himself he's become. Like, in the course of 1 year, Russell Wilson went to front runner for MVP, it's his to lose, to a guy who completed 11 passes versus the Rams in the playoffs. He connected with DK Metcalf on a pair of touchdowns, 51 yards in the first half off a broken play, then a 12-yarder with 2:28 left, really to make the score more respectable than it, you know, than it could have been. Seattle never played with the lead. They, as I mentioned, 2 of 14 on thirds. Their 10-game home playoff win streak is snapped. Of course, you know, different crowd issue there. Jamal Adams said he played with a torn labrum in his left shoulder afterwards. He thought he'd throw that in. And in addition to Donald's injury, Cooper Kupp limped off, grabbing at his right knee in the closing minutes of that game. But can I get to the peak? Let's just sort of do the postmortem on the Seahawks, if we could, Chrissy. In a 5 minute,
okay.
In a
before you go,
yes,
no, please. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you. No, go ahead.
Oh no. Okay. So in a 5 minute span in this game, and we're talking in the second quarter, he kicks a 50-yard field goal, 4th and 1, to tie the score up at 3-3. Okay, 4th and 1, 50-yard field goal. Agree, disagree. That's what he did. 4th and 1, 50-yarder. Okay, goes in, bails him out. Then DK Metcalf is screaming on the sidelines because things aren't going well for him or the Seahawks. They're down in this game at this point. And so they force feed a pass to DK Metcalf in a playoff game. Pick six. That's the pick six I'm talking about. Darius Williams makes it 13-3. That's what happens when you force feed a ball to a whining wide receiver. 2:55 left in the second quarter. It's 3rd and 9. Goff goes to Akers for 44 yards. And Pete Carroll with, again, it was stupid challenge weekend. That was another theme of the weekend. He challenges that Goff was over the line of scrimmage, which was just idiotic because he was clearly not over the line of scrimmage. So they lose a timeout in the process. And then on a late second half drive, just north of 2 minutes, 2:01 left, he doesn't, you know, the team's not disciplined enough. They jump off sides, 1st and goal at the 10, makes it 1st and goal at the 5. The Rams end up taking a 20-10 lead into the half because they cash in on that. So it's just one, those are 5 different gaffes in a 5 minute span that are either directly on Carroll's shoulder or indirectly, like you don't have your team prepared in any way. And at the end, he was just like, he couldn't believe his team had lost. McVay, by the way, goes to 37-0 now when leading at halftime. The Seahawks had been 19-6 straight up since the start of last year in one-score games. This one doesn't even end up in one-score game, so throw out that stat. But five-minute period where it's just 5 different gaffes that I just rattled off the top of my head. So Pete Carroll, for those on Twitter at Beating the Book who want to do your rankings, there's the Pete Carroll candidacy for the worst coaching job of the weekend. I just thought it was awful, Chris.
Yeah, but once again, you know, who are these guys? You know, you look at Pete Carroll, okay, 69 years old. How did he get to where he is? Where was he like before yesterday? Well, he was, you know, pretty successful at USC. He won a Super Bowl with Seattle. You know, so this is just who he is. Now, all of a sudden, I know, you know, myself and my friends, we've talked about this. If they need somebody on, you know, up in the booth or whatever to tell them the metrics as the game is going on. But if you're a guy like Pete Carroll, I could just say, what, I'm going to listen to some pencil neck little geek that never played football his entire life. That's who I'm supposed to take advice from. You know, and we see this all the time. And, you know, we're talking football, of course, but we see it all the time, you know, in all walks of life. Guys who buy football teams, let's say the Washington football team. You know, you've got a guy like Daniel Snyder, who was, I don't know if he was a billionaire at 35, but he was, you know, pretty darn close. He was instantly a genius in everything that he ever did. Now, all of a sudden, he owns a football team, and he thinks, okay, look how, you know, he's been, you know, how smart I am. I'm smart enough to buy this football team at 35 years old. Of course I know exactly what I'm doing. And, of course, you know, he didn't. But, you know, this is just, you know, this is how the egos work on people, not just, you know, people in authoritative positions. And some guys can adapt and other guys are just trapped in within their own ego and the own and the things that they've done their whole life, do what's right and won't be able to adapt. I think Pete Carroll and probably all these coaches that you're talking about fall into that category. But you know, right now we're talking about Pete, and I think he definitely falls into that category.
Yeah, well, I mean, all of that may be true, but some of this stuff that we're going to go through today is just so simple that I find it hard to believe that you can't adapt to certain things. Maybe you're right. I will tell you this. I was looking forward to this golf at Lambeau matchup. I love that it's – you said it was 7 or 6.5 in the end?
No. It's 7.
Okay.
But that's what I did want to say is, you know, when I kind of said I like it higher, and I still kind of like it higher, but – part of it was Aaron Donald being hurt.
Yep.
And Cooper Kupp being hurt. Their best offensive player, their best defensive player. But as of this morning, McVay is saying that they should be fine by Sunday. Again, coaches lie, and they don't have to say who's participating in practice and all that yet, you know, but they will by later in the week. But I would keep an eye on those two injuries, because if those guys, you know, are out or hampered, you know, 7's probably a pretty cheap number.
Yeah, I think it's cheap. I really like the Packers, and I may like that game more than any of the 4 this coming weekend. How did this? And just to say it one more time, how did this Rams team lose to the Jets and kill some of us in Survivor? Because not only did Goff, you know, we harp on Jared Goff in that game and the Goff face, but you know what? Aaron Donald didn't do anything in that game either. Like, it was an all-out fail. They just simply did not show up for that game, didn't care. And again, just, you know, from a betting perspective, always keep in mind these pitfalls exist. Sadly, those of us who had the Rams that week fell into that little pitfall, and that was the end of that. All right, number 2. We'll start on number 2 here on game 2 on Saturday.
Ravens at the Bills. This number opened between 2.5 and 3.
I guess
it's kind of like take your choice.
3 was my guess.
Yesterday. Yeah. I really, I've been a Bills guy, you know, certainly for the last, you know, 2 months. I thought I was going to like the Bills an awful lot in this game. I still kind of like them. But, you know, we play that little 2.5-3 game at South Point. Well, the customers play it on us. So I try to hold the whole number if and when I can. So I opened 3, and, you know, I'm looking at my screen right now. We got a lot of money plus 3. And as I look at it, I think the public will be on the Ravens. The Bills won. They didn't look that great. Everybody really has, you know, recency so much in mind. And some of that, you know, I know we kind of knock that as being, you know, not very smart. But a lot of times it is. Sometimes teams are just peaking. And right now I think this Ravens team is really playing well. But I still like the Bills. I think they're going to win this game. And, you know, their defense, I think, hasn't been all that good for the last couple of months. But I think this is, and I'm looking right now, it's not the highest. No, there's a couple high-scoring games that we got total-wise. But I think it's going to be a real good game. I thought 3 was a good number. I can definitely see 2.5. It's going to be right in that range. But I think the public's going to be on the Ravens in this game.
Yeah, I guess 3. It was the only thing I thought to make it. I was like, that just seems like an obvious 3. But I think you're right. I think Baltimore money will come in on this just because of recency here. Baltimore gets there by virtue of their 20-13 win over the Titans. They rally from 10 points down in the first of the Sunday wild card games. Lamar Jackson finally with his first postseason victory. They snapped a string of 21 straight games, the Ravens did, lost by the franchise in either the regular season or playoffs when trailing by 10 or more. How about that? Jackson ended up 17 of 24 for 179. No touchdowns, 1 pick. He was sacked 5 times, but 16 carries for 136 yards and a touchdown. His 6th 100-yard rushing game. It is, rather, the 6th 100-yard rushing game by a quarterback in the postseason. Lamar and Colin Kaepernick each with 2. Marquise Hollywood Brown, 7 catches for 109, 401 total yards for the Ravens in victory. They also shut down, and this is the most important thing, 2,000-yard rusher Derrick Henry, holding Tennessee to its fewest points all season. Derrick Henry ends up with 18 carries for 40 yards. He ran all over the Ravens with 328 yards combined in the past two meetings this year, or the past two meetings period, rather. Both Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams were back on the Baltimore defensive line, though. Henry with his worst performance of the year, again, 18 for 40. Ravens held the Titans to 12 first downs. Baltimore smothered that Tennessee offense that had tied for fourth in the league this year, averaging 30.7 points a game. They had more offensive yards per game during the season than any team but Kansas City, and the Ravens outgained them 401 to 209 in the end. 209 with just 51 total rushing yards. Titans did have the ball and a chance to win, but Marcus Peters intercepted Tannehill's pass intended for Khalif Raymond with 150 left, and that was that. Titans lost their first home playoff game in 12 years. The key moment in that game, though, Titans, to me, when they were up 10 to nothing, they had outgained the Ravens 126 to 36 in the first quarter. And the Ravens held Tennessee then to minus 7 yards in the second quarter. It was the third fewest in any quarter of a playoff game since the 2000 season. But that was the moment. It was third down for Baltimore, third and seven at their own 28, down 10 to nothing. And Lamar Jackson made an unbelievable play. He was flushed out, remained patient, hit Andrews for 17 yards. That drive resulted in a field goal. And the next Baltimore drive, down 10 to 3, third and nine at their own, or excuse me, at the Tennessee 48, 2:32 left in the second quarter, a 48-yard touchdown run to tie it up 10 to 10. Those two plays, if they don't convert that first, that third down 10 to nothing deep in their own territory, there's no way I can prove this. But if they don't convert that, that could be a Tennessee run out, just like it was last year. But instead, Lamar makes the play. This year he makes the play. Last year he does not. And the rest is history. We'll come back. We'll do more on this game because there's so much I want to say about the losing coaches in both. Coming back, numbers game, guessing lines right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Find the perfect gift for yourself or the VSiN fan and sports bettor in your life at the VSiN store. Pick up a cool new tee for yourself and find unique gift ideas for friends and family. We have high-quality t-shirts, hats, and mugs with your favorite VSiN shows, hosts, and sports betting quotes. And now all VSiN subscribers save 20% off every order in the store. Give the gift of VSiN to friends, family, and yourself this year. Visit VSiN.com/store today.
Before you place your next bet, visit VSiN.com for all the latest data and powerful betting tools. Start with our live odds, team comparisons, and previews for every game on the schedule. Then dive deeper with live tracking of betting trends and line movements. And don't miss our unique tools, including odds comparisons from sportsbooks across the country, prop bet search engine, and custom parlay calculator. Everything you need to increase your betting knowledge and confidence is at your fingertips. Visit VSiN.com today.
If you didn't catch VSiN last week, here's some of what you missed.
I have no problem, Gil, if the Eagles would have called the league office Sunday afternoon and after they and said, look, fellas, we can't guarantee we're going to play this game with all our guys. We've got a lot of injuries. We want to play Nate Sudfeld. We're not going into this game with the intent to win the game. So if you put us on national TV, it may give you a black eye. If they would have done that, or if they would have just said Nate Sudfeld's the starter, all bets are off. But the fact that they dangled the carrot in front of the Giants and that clearly the Washington football team wasn't equipped to win the game with the quarterback who couldn't move, and then to pull it back, that's where the conflict was. So you're asking about tanking, and I'm talking about integrity and honesty. I think those are two different issues, and I think that's where the conflict comes in.
Fair enough. I like the answer. And Doug Peterson's famous comment after the game, Michael, which I'm sure you loved, quote, yes, I was coaching to win. Yes, that was my decision solely. Nate, meaning Sudfeld, has been here for 4 years, and I felt he deserved an opportunity to get some snaps.
And yes, Lee Harvey Oswald was on the sixth floor, and yes, he shot that. Yes, all those things are true.
Okay, so we're still okay with each other? We got through that.
I'm good. I'm good with it. I understand. Now, just add one little flavor into this, the Eagles cap. You know, they're going to have to – they'll lose two players – to fit that six pick in over the night.
You think they'll pick a quarterback if they have a shot? You do.
I do.
Okay.
I think the top 10 will be all – I think this will be a quarterback-filtered draft because there's so many teams in the top 10 that need them, and there's so many teams in the teens that need them.
Yeah.
Starting with the Patriots, starting with the Colts, and some of those teams. Washington, your football team.
Yeah.
You know, so there's going to be a lot of action in that top 10.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
With the football playoffs and basketball games every week, it's time to get into BetMGM Sports Nevada, the premier sports betting app. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Just download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. In addition, VSiN's reporting live from Mandalay Bay every weekend. Check us out down there. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander and Chris Andrews guessing lines. Not really guessing lines, but letting you know what the guesses were. Wild card weekend, a look back. Divisional weekend, a look ahead. Chris, you agree with me. There's no way I can prove it. But that third down early, and I know we're like, oh, we're all about the Ravens. But if that play doesn't happen, I don't know. Maybe the Titans roll them again.
Well, I'm with you because I know exactly the play you're talking about. When we needed the Titans pretty good in that game, and when it was 10-0, I really thought that the Titans were going to just blow them away. You know, just totally dominate the game. You know, we've kind of seen that in the past, and I thought it was just going to happen again. And that was just a huge play that kind of sparked that team. And, you know, these things happen during the course of a game. You know, one thing I say to a lot of people, I have probably mentioned on the show, you know, games could take on a life of their own.
Yeah.
And this is one of those situations where the life of that game, the flow of that game, the outcome of that game changed dramatically on that one play. I really do believe that. So I'm with you all the way. I know exactly what you're talking about. We've seen that happen, you know, occasionally. Sometimes you could over-dramatize what happens early in a game. The team scored a touchdown, they didn't. But I think this really was key because I think this is a team that, you know, maybe could easily have lost confidence in themselves, you know, had they lost again to a team that's kind of dominated them, to a quarterback that maybe has not had great success in the playoffs. But they converted that. They were back in the game. And really, I mean, it was they that dominated from there on. I mean, it became a whole different game.
And the key sequence, you know, again, 10-14 left in the game. 10-14 left in the fourth quarter. Second and two at the Baltimore 40, down 17-13. Titans ball. Tannehill incomplete. They got Derrick Henry. I know he's not having a good game, but they got Derrick Henry. Tannehill incomplete, intended for Brown. Third and two at the Baltimore 40. 10-10 left. Down 17-13. Tannehill. Fifth. Fourth and two at the Baltimore 40. Down 17-13 with 10:06 left. Incomplete, intended for Jonnu Smith. Brett Kern punts. Next drive, 20-13 after a Tucker field goal. Then the Tannehill pick that sealed the deal. Fourth and two at the Baltimore 40, down 17-13 with 10:06 left. They punt. Jason, can you give us perspective on that? Can you throw up that tweet about this? If you think we're making a big deal over this decision, well, this has historical. This actually is historically an anomaly. It simply doesn't happen. Fourth and two at the Baltimore 40, down 17-13. This is the Mike Vrabel. And by the way, of all the four coaches I'm singling out, Carroll, Tomlin, Reich, and Vrabel, Vrabel's the one I least expected this from.
Right.
And here it is. We have two, actually. This is the Pro Football Bot, fourth down decision bot. Recommendation, very strong, go for it, plus 7.9 win probability if you go for it. And then here's the perspective from, I believe it's Pro Football Perspective, is it? Let me get this right. Pro Football Perspective, they put it in historical terms, and they say, and it goes a little something like this, where is it, guys? Okay. But basically what they're saying is it just doesn't happen. It's the first time in their entire database, that this has ever happened in this situation. I'll give you the exact comment. It's the first time all the way back to 1994 that a team in the playoffs punted on fourth and two from this field position down by one score in the fourth quarter. And he does it. I mean, look at you. By the way,
that's hard to believe that it's a first time. Because you know, I can see some conservative coaches doing that, but it's hard to believe that's the first and only time in their database.
You're actually right. That is a little hard to believe that it's the first time, but that's what it says, according to Pro Football Reference. Not a shock that Tony Dungy and Chris Sims had no issue with the punt.
Of course, right. Exactly. That's why I'm saying it's a shock that that's the only one, right? Yeah.
We'll get to the Buffalo side of this momentarily and the Indy side of that. So many things to discuss. But the line finally in 10 seconds, Chrissy, what was it that you put up, 3 or 2.5 here?
Oh, I opened 3. I'm at 2.5 now. I think if you miss the 3, I think you ain't going to get it. I don't think it's going to be around anymore.
All right. We'll do the Buffalo side of this next. Coming back right here on Guessing Lines.
You want to make every game interesting?
Gil Alexander, Chris Andrews here as well. People are like, wait, this isn't your normal Guessing Lines format. Well, you were just going through these in chronological order this upcoming weekend and hearkening back to what we saw this past weekend. So I never really got a chance, Chris, to talk about the Bills side of this because we've already submitted Pete Carroll and Mike Vrabel's gaffes on the wrong end of the Rams and the Ravens. Buffalo, they're AFC East champs for the first time since 1995, hosting their first playoff game since 1996. Josh Allen, 2 touchdown passes, another on the ground, 27-24 win over the Colts. Their first playoff win since December of 1995. They nearly squandered a 24-10 fourth quarter lead. Phillip Rivers, 4th-and-11 from Buffalo's 47 at the end. He heaved a deep pass for T.Y. Hilton, surrounded by defenders. Micah Hyde broke through, knocked it down. That sealed the deal. Buffalo has won 7 straight now since the Arizona Hail Mary for its longest winning streak since 1990. 6,700 fans in attendance there. Allen, 26 of 35 for 324 for those 2 touchdowns. No picks. Sacked twice, 11 of 54 on the ground with a touchdown. Diggs, 6 of 128 in a touchdown. They were only 2 of 9 on third down. They allowed 472 total yards by Indianapolis. Indy was 9 of 17 on third. They were 2 of 4 on fourth. 76 total plays. Let me just start in the first half. For those people who had Indy plus 3.5 in the first half, you had about a 99% cover probability in that. Up 10-7, third and goal at the Buffalo 1 with 2 minutes left in the half. Couldn't do it.
The theme for the Colts all season long are those short yardage situations.
Why not kick a field goal? These teams are allergic to field goals, Chris. Fourth and goal at the 4 after a 3-yard loss.
Difference
just kick
in
a field
the game,
goal.
Yeah.
They go for it. And of course, in Phillip Rivers fashion, it's like off the fingertips. I just don't understand.
Well, I think that, you know, I think there is like a misunderstanding of a lot of the metrics that are out there that you know, kind of eschew the field goal in certain situations. But that's not, you know, 4th-and-1 and 4th-and-4 are, you know, 2 vastly different things. And I think that sometimes guys, go get the 3. You know, I mean, you got to do things like that. But there was, you know, if we're going to talk about Buffalo for just a second,
please.
You know, we needed Buffalo pretty good in that game, too. I look back and I'm not sure how we won all this money for this weekend. Yeah, because we didn't win a whole bunch of games. But that was one of them. We needed Buffalo pretty good. But, you know, the whole time, like, I looked at it like Buffalo didn't stop Indianapolis as much as Indianapolis stopped themselves.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a concern for this Bills defense, I think. But, you know, and again, I don't want recency to influence me too much. I mean, it's one game. They are on a hell of a streak. The only game they've lost, like, in a couple months was that Hail Mary pass to Arizona, which was an absolute miracle. So I don't want to knock them too much after one game. But that really was the truth of it, that their defense didn't stop them as much as Indianapolis stopped themselves.
I want to get to the closing sequence of this game because, yeah, I mean, this could have gone terribly wrong for Buffalo in the end. You're right, Indy kind of stopping themselves. Frank Reich also, by the way, Josh Allen, of course, in the Bills, once they failed to convert on fourth and goal at the end of the second quarter, matriculate the ball all the way down the field. They get in the end zone, and down goes Indy's plus 3.5 to the first half. That was unbelievable. But Frank Reich also said he regretted. He said he regretted that. He said he regretted rushing to challenge a play where he thought Bills running back Zach Moss fumbled early in the fourth quarter. The decision left the Colts with only one timeout the rest of the game. Reich had time before challenging the play because the cart was brought on the field to take the injured Moss off the field, and he still challenged it. And it was just it was, again, stupid challenge weekend. The Colts ended their season in which they won 11 games for the first time since 2014, reached the playoffs for the second time in 3 years under Reich. Rivers ended up with 309 yards passing. His career playoff record drops to 5-7 in completing his first and potentially last season with the Colts, pondering retirement, only one AFC championship game appearance in his career. But the last sequence, from Reich's gaffes to Sean McDermott almost saving the day twice in that last sequence for his team. First, the timeout to get them to review the Pittman fumble in the closing seconds of the game because they weren't at all going to look at it, even though the ref said after the fact that the replay booth, you know, did initiate it, so Buffalo got their timeout back, even though it apparently wasn't a fumble, if you can follow all that. But he was the one that had to initiate that review, and then somehow it didn't go the Bills' way. They said that it stands, not a fumble. And so then it was this weird thing where the clock, it was bizarre. 2 seconds, they, like, stole 3 seconds from the Colts, and then the clock winds, and the Colts have no urgency to run the play, and Sean McDermott ends up using that timeout that they gave back to him in a sort of NBA or college basketball foul to give kind of way. He lets it go to 5, and right before they're about to snap, he calls the timeout. So they effectively lost 8 seconds. It was the weirdest thing. And McDermott basically tried to save his team the first time, saved his team the second time. The difference between 19 seconds and 14 seconds in that situation is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Massive. Yeah. And the Colts become the first team in playoff history to lose a game while gaining at least 450 yards with no turnovers, according to Elias, prior to Saturday. Such teams were 11-0. So many weird things. And then the announcers also, like Charles Davis, when they were going for it from trying to make it a 6-point deficit as opposed to an 8-point deficit, they got the penalty. And so it was a 1 yard, 2-point margin. They correctly went for it. I thought the Colts did. And Charles Davis was like, no, this is stupid. They shouldn't. Like, I was like, I don't even know what I'm watching sometimes with the announcers either. And at Buffalo -3, and you said that's where it started. Now it's 2.5. And yeah, I think you're right. Baltimore money's going to come.
I think it's Baltimore money. I'm not sure that's the winner of the game. As a matter of fact, I kind of like the Bills still, you know, but I do think if you're looking to play the Bills, my hunch would be a wait. I think the money's going to show on the dog.
Man. Okay. Well, those are Saturday games. So we got through the Saturday games finally. But again, we just went through Carroll and Vrabel and Reich. Like, I don't remember a weekend like this where the losing coaches were this bad. Just, again, I get the sense you think I'm exaggerating it, but we got one more to come still. We're not done with Mike Tomlin still to come. But we'll talk about the two games on Sunday, Cleveland, Kansas City, and, of course, Tampa Bay, New Orleans. We'll look back to this past weekend as well. Whew. Much to be discussed. Coming back right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. All right, Chrissy, we're off to Sunday finally. What do you got Sunday?
All right. Cleveland at Kansas City.
I guess 10. Was I correct? I believe I was.
Yeah, it's pretty solid 10. That's what we opened. It seemed like just a solid number to me. They had to be about a 10-point favorite. So that's what we opened. That's where we are. I'm looking right now. A little bit of action on the game, not much, but a little bit behind the Chiefs, but not all that greatly. I wouldn't be surprised if Cleveland gets in public's a good share of money in this coming week.
No practicing, no head coach on the sideline. 48-37 win, their first postseason win for the Browns in more than a quarter century. No Kevin Stefanski specifically, no Pro Bowl guard Joel Bitonio. We talked about that with Jeff Schwartz last week. Yeah. Denzel Ward back in Cleveland, all tested positive for COVID. They'll all be back next week. But, I mean, there's nothing else to say about this than the beginning of this game. The first snap of the game, Marquise Pouncey snaps it over Big Ben's head. Touchdown Browns. Carl Joseph recovers on a play where James Conner and Ben had a shot at it first, and Conner sort of slid by it, and Ben had the urgency to pick that up like Cam Newton did in the Super Bowl. Like, none whatsoever. He's like, look at that. Look at that ball. Oh, you recovered it. So that's the first play. Second drive, MJ Stewart picks off Big Ben. Three plays later, Mayfield to Landry, 40-yard touchdown pass on 3rd and 4, 14-0. Third Pittsburgh drive. They punt when they couldn't convert a 3rd and 1, 3 and out, 6-play drive. Later, Hunt, 11-yard touchdown on the 6th play, 21-0. Fourth Steeler drive. Sheldrick Redwine picks off Big Ben, returns at 30 yards. 3 plays later, Hunt, 8 yards, 28-0. Christy, the only thing I thought about was Doug Williams and the Washington football team in Super Bowl 22. And the second quarter of that Super Bowl, for those of a certain age, Washington scored 35 unanswered points in the second quarter of that Super Bowl. And I've never seen anything like that. This was about as close to that as I think we've ever seen.
Well, that was a great result for me. I love that. Didn't love yesterday so much. Now, I was on Washington that day. I went home. I talk about games taking on a life of their own. After that second Browns touchdown, that game took on a life of its own.
Yes.
First one you could overcome. Second one, a little tougher. Then the third one, and I didn't even see the fourth touchdown. I left. I was coming home, but I had my daughter texting me. I didn't want to listen to the play-by-play. I didn't want to do – I was zoning out to music. What the Steelers are doing. And I walked in the door. It's 28-0. But it did take on a life of its own. But we wound up. It was one of those games we needed either the Browns to win outright or the Steelers to cover. Of course, me being a Steelers fan, I was hoping Steelers to cover was going to be the outcome. But that was, at that point, it's virtually impossible. That's just not going to happen. Listen, kudos to the Browns. But by the way, can I say one thing? How come Kevin Stefanski couldn't be on the telephone?
Yeah, I don't have the answer to that. Yeah, I don't know.
It's an NFL reasons issue.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Did we not have some extenuating circumstances this year, games being played on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and all that other stuff, that they could have said, oh, yeah, he could be on the telephone talking to his team. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I think Stefanski – one of the guys up for coach of the year. I think he's done a hell of a job with his team. How can he not be allowed to talk to them on the telephone or text or whatever? I mean, that's just, it's insanity to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Didn't end up. Obviously they didn't need him.
Yeah. Didn't end up mattering yesterday, but, well, you know where I'm going with this. First of all, let me just get the details. Cleveland, first playoff game since 2002. Their first postseason win of any kind since beating New England. New Year's Day, 95. First playoff road win since 69. Again, doing it despite practicing just over once over the last 2 weeks, having lost 17 straight at Heinz Field. Scored as many points in the first quarter as they had in the previous 12 first quarters in Pittsburgh. Steelers led the NFL in sacks but failed to get to Mayfield even once. Cleveland's 48 points, the most Pittsburgh has ever given up in the playoffs. Mayfield, 21 of 34 for 263, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He was never sacked. Browns gave up 553 total yards, 501 passing. Big Ben's final stats, 47 for 68 for 501. 4 touchdowns, 4 picks, was not sacked. plus five in turnovers is all you need to know. Plus five in turnovers. But here's the sequence, though. So it'd be one thing if Pittsburgh just went away after the 28-0 deficit, right? But down 35-16, just over halfway through the third quarter, they score a touchdown and make it 35-16. And then for a moment, you're like, oh, my. Could we be talking about Buffalo-Houston Oilers comebacks? Like, what is
sure.
That was the other sort of NFL historical reference. It was the Doug Williams Super Bowl and then the big Frank Reich comeback. And you're just like, is that what we're watching? So they're down 19, and correctly, they go for two. They don't convert. Okay, fine. Next drive, they score again to make it 35 to 22. And here, because they went for two the previous time, you're like, oh, well, they clearly get it. They should go for two again to cut it to 11. Nope. They kick an extra point to make it 35-23. What are we watching, Chris?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, I cannot believe this is happening. Math is hard. I get it. But
yeah,
come on.
That 12-point deficit is just, you know, and I remember going back to college, I want to say like 3 or 4 years ago when Tennessee was playing Kentucky, I want to say. Maybe it was Florida. I can't remember. And they went up by 12 in the fourth quarter, and they kicked to go up by 13. Well, you know, the 13 is no different than 12 at that point because they have to score two touchdowns. And, in the fourth quarter, of course, in the first quarter, 13 is a nice lead. But I don't know what he was thinking on that. I don't know. You have to try to cut that to 11. You know, you have to try
you
to
have
do
to.
That. I don't know.
Al Michaels goes into the break and says, yeah, no, by the book, that's what you got to do, kick the extra point there. I'm like, what? And they come back from the break, and Al Michaels, because Al Michaels rarely makes that mistake, he's like, yeah, on review, he corrected himself. He's like, I don't know what book that is, but he probably should have gone for two. And then Chris Collinsworth says, nah, I'd have gone for one. I'm like, what? Okay. Then, of course, I haven't even gotten to it yet. That's bad enough. Fourth and one at the 46 to start the fourth quarter. It's 35-23. They try to draw Cleveland offsides or whatever the hell they were doing, sending 45 players in motion, and it didn't fool anybody, and they punt. And then, of course, Cleveland scores a touchdown on the ensuing drive. Mayfield calmly takes them 80 yards in six plays, 42-23. Katie bar the door. Here's the quote from Tomlin after the game.
Yeah.
Quote, I wanted to pin them down and maybe provide a short field for their offense.
Yeah.
I just wanted to keep the momentum going in terms of field positioning. Unquote. Chrissy, we just spent an hour.
Yeah, you haven't stopped them all day.
Yeah.
You know, why did you think this time you were going to pin them in their own territory?
If I was an NFL owner and I was a little more volatile than I probably ought to be, I might have fired Mike Tomlin after that game. Like, I can't. We just spent an hour going through four losing coaches in Tomlin and Vrabel and Reich and Carroll. And I don't know which was worse of the bunch, which was the worst of the bunch. But I just know I don't remember one weekend, let alone a playoff weekend, where you had that many. Maybe in a regular season weekend there have been, and I just, we just get tired of naming them all. But in a playoff weekend, whew. And like I said, I don't include Rivera was fine in defeat. Nagy, I just think his team is so bad that I can't really blame him.
Right.
But those other four guys, I mean, some of this falls squarely on them. So in the end, when we go to these three games, and we still have to get to, obviously, we still have to get to Tampa Bay, New Orleans here after the break. But KC minus 10. Buffalo, you said minus 2.5 right now over Baltimore. Green Bay 7 against the Rams. I like the Packers straight up, and I think a Green Bay Baltimore teaser feels awfully good to me right now for a grip.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go look and see what we did on teasers for the week. I know we've actually had a really good year, like booking teasers. Believe it or not,
interesting.
And that was another one. I looked through, and I had Michael in my office, on Saturday, and I was showing him, because Michael's always we couldn't beat the teasers. We couldn't beat the, well, we beat them more than you think, you know. And some guys, I know you've done really well with teasers this year, but overall, the public has not. But that sounds like a pretty good teaser, the one you just said. It really does sound pretty good.
Sounds good until, as you say, Chrissy, the games take on a life of their own. And
yes, they do. You're like, yes, they do.
You're like, I guess this Pittsburgh teaser leg I have is not going to hit. We'll come back. We'll do the last of the four divisional games. Coming back right here on the Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Tampa Bay at New Orleans is the final game. I ended up with New Orleans minus 3.5. What did you come up with?
I like 3 better. And this game actually opened 3.5 almost everywhere. I could see it. So I went to 3, and I was the first one to go to 3. And then naturally, you know, the guys poured in and laid the 3. But I told them, nah, just hold the number. Hold the number. I think this is going to settle in at 3. And I don't want to play, you know, listen, I got to dodge this 3 almost every single week. But now when I got to dodge them in a big playoff game, could be pretty consequential. I think this is a great matchup. And we talked about games taking on a life of their own. You know, I look back at the New Orleans Buccaneers game early in the year, or New Orleans just absolutely obliterated them. That was a game that I did not think took on a life of its own. It, you know, New Orleans just really, you know, trampled them. But I do think Tampa's a different team right now, and I think 3 was a real good number here.
Yeah, the reason I said 3.5 is I figured 2, you know, double-digit stompings deserved the hook. And to your point, yeah, those final scores were 34-23 and 38-3. Let's not forget that one. That was a very peculiar game that definitely took on a life of its own. By the way, Felica chiming in on what you were saying. Will you stop making sense? He says like the college football committee actually thought about that. All right, well, let's start with this one. Tampa Bay at New Orleans. Tampa Bay beats Washington. They beat the Washington football team 31-23 on Saturday night.
Yeah.
First playoff win for the franchise, the Bucs franchise, since 2002. Their Super Bowl year, by the way, when they won it all with Coach John Gruden. Tom Brady against Washington, 22 of 40 for 381, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked 3 times. His 42nd postseason start. That is nuts. 42nd postseason start. Mike Evans caught 6 passes for 119 yards, 507 total yards of offense for Tampa Bay. But they beat a Washington team, which was really the one team that lost this weekend, where you almost want to stand up and applaud for them. Taylor Heineke.
Sure.
Taylor Heineke, everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe Washington's quarterback of the future. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. just bear with me for a second because I have to get my feels on this.
Okay.
20, don't let me have my moment here. 26 of 44 for 306. 26 of 44 for 306. Off the street, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. He was sacked twice. 6 carries for 46 yards and a touchdown. I knew when he scored that touchdown, when he dove at the pylon, I knew he hurt himself. They were trying to figure out afterwards. I was like, it was on the touchdown. They thought it was like a subsequent hit. I was like, nope, when he landed on his chest. But it was his second pro start, his first ever in the playoffs. He had only appeared in 8 games lifetime. He was signed December 8th by Washington to the practice squad. He was taking online math classes at his alma mater, Old Dominion, ODU, when Washington called him to be its quarantine quarterback. Remember, the Denver-New Orleans game was such a horrific event for the Broncos, the Kendall Hinton game, that Washington was like, well, we got to get ourselves a quarantine quarterback in case that happens to us. Hey, let's get this kid from ODU. Taylor Heineke used to, you know, Ron Rivera had him over in Carolina. So that scramble for an 8-yard touchdown, by the way, by diving at the pylon in the corner of the end zone, banged up his left shoulder. He didn't look the same on the next drive. Cam Sims was his big target, 7 for 104. But Washington, I just want to say one last thing about Washington. They had Alex Smith, poor Alex Smith, after the 17 surgeries, comeback player of the year. There's nothing you can say bad about Alex Smith. Clearly, the calf just couldn't hold up here. Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen, who was the other guy that Rivera brought over for Carolina. This kid comes off the street and is by far their best quarterback of the season. By far. And so, like, all year, I'm like, they don't have the quarterback of their future is not on their roster. He's going to get a shot at it, shouldn't he?
Oh, he'll get a shot for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
He deserves a shot. You know, no doubt about that. Listen, he's obviously not that talented, or he wouldn't have been taking a math course a month ago.
Right.
You know, but kudos to him for really just an admirable performance. I'm looking up his QBR real quick here. Yeah, 63.2 is QBR. I mean, it's really good. So he played terrific. I mean, he's going to be a folk hero, I think, in Washington for years to come. I think, you know, and well-deserved.
And
I mean,
well-deserved.
He really – yeah, I mean, you know, he almost pulled out this game. You know, I mean, he gave it a shot. They had a run at it. You know, why not?
The amazing thing about that game, the Tampa Bay-Washington game, and this shows how none of us know a damn thing in the end. Like, even those of us who thought Washington could keep it close and maybe even cover, our game script to do that, our path to doing that was, oh, Young, Payne, Allen, Sweat, they're going to mess with Tom Brady. Yeah. He's a statue.
Yeah.
That's how they're going to keep it close. Instead, those guys did virtually nothing. Like, Chase Young couldn't get to Brady. He wasn't even close to Brady all game. And instead, it's this kid, again, off the street, who was taking math classes. He was the one who kept him in the game. Nothing. Nothing about this game. No one had this game pegged. Nobody. And so Tampa Bay gets to play New Orleans for a third time. And I guess, well, you know, Tampa Bay, they left a lot of points on the board too, right? They left a lot on the table. They're going in to play New Orleans. It's the 43-year-old against the 41-year-old, and it's New Orleans who gets by Chicago. They do so 21-9 in the end, a Jimmy Graham touchdown catch, and a great catch it was, at the buzzer. Wins Bears teaser legs, but if you got the worst number, it does not get you the plus 11 and a half, it does not get you the minus 11 and a half, I should say, were saved by that, the plus 11 and a halfs were not saved by that, right? Those who had the Bears were like, oh, no extra point, what's the rule? Well, the rule is the Minneapolis Miracle decided there's no extra point in that. If they had one second on the clock, they would have had to have kicked the extra point. But
we talked about that on the Megapod.
We did, yeah. A few weeks back, we were talking about the Minneapolis Miracle creating that rule change. By the way, how much did Jim Nantz want that last Drew Brees touchdown to count? The one where he waved it over? Nantz is like, nope, it's a touchdown, Tony. And Tony's on delay in his COVID protocol. He's like, no, I don't think so, Jim. And finally, it wasn't. Anyway, that was such a weird game because it looked like at one point, it looked like the Bears waved the white flag, right? 4th and 9 at their own 26 with 7:45 left. They're down 21-3. They punt. Like, who cares if you lose by 18? You might as well lose by 100. So they punt there. And then subsequent to that, they have this amazing goal line stand against the Saints, the one where Brees' apparent touchdown did not count. And then they matriculate the ball 99 yards for the Graham touchdown. It's like the weirdest, like, what's happening? But I don't, you know, in the same way that we talked about Vrabel and Reich and Tomlin and Carroll, I don't hold this over Nagy because I just don't think his team's that good. The Bears were held to 11 first downs. They were 1 of 10 on third downs. They only had 239 total yards, only 48 rushing. They only had the ball 21 minutes and 2 seconds. You know, Saints had never previously allowed fewer than 14 points in a playoff game. They allow 3 plus that last touchdown, so I guess 9 here. And, you know what, Brees, 28 of 39 for 265, 2 touchdowns, no picks, he wasn't sacked. Kamara, 23 for 99 on the ground, a touchdown. Deontay Harris kept the Saints really ahead in the first half by himself, it seemed like. 7 catches for 83 yards. So, I mean, I don't know. New Orleans is about, I don't know how to feel about this game, Chris, because New Orleans is about what I think they are, which is to say, something about them worries me. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to chime in there, and you know, I've never been the biggest Saints guy. I think that they're good. They're real good. You know, you got Peyton and Brees, you know, a very good combination coach and quarterback. But I look back, even the year they won the Super Bowl, I had Indianapolis in that game. Obviously, I was wrong. But I look back, I'm just not crazy about this team. You know, and every year they're highly competitive. You know, they're right in the playoff mix and the Super Bowl mix. And I don't know. It's hard for me to pinpoint exactly what it is with this game. We talk about games taking on a life of its own. What if, and I forget the guy's name, the Bears guy that dropped that touchdown pass.
Wims. Oh. Yeah, that could have changed everything.
Oh, my God. Could that have changed the game? I think it might have.
Yeah.
Easier to say now, of course. But I don't know. And that's why I say, and I know they've beaten Tampa twice. The one that they won by 11, what was it,
34-23. Yeah, that was first game of the year, yeah.
34-23, yeah. So, I mean, that was an okay performance. That wasn't terrible. The other game, I mean, they totally smashed Tampa Bay. They crushed them from the beginning. But do those two games mean something? Yes, they do mean something for sure. But I just think right now Tampa Bay is playing its best ball of the year. I always think there's just a little something missing out of this New Orleans team. It's hard for me to put my finger on it because their defense is very good. You know, Breeze, I mean, he is a Hall of Famer, no doubt. Peyton's a great coach. But I kind of like Tampa in this game. Even plus the 3, and there was 3.5 earlier. You might see that again. I'm not sure. But I like Tampa. I think Tampa's going to win this game.
This is, you know how on the Megapod I asked the question, which is the game I want no part of? Like, if you lived in a bizarro world, you had to bet a side, and we do it during the regular season, but we also do it for the playoffs. If I had to bet 3 here on the side and take 1 pass, this is probably the pass for me. Like, there's so many different outcomes on this one for me. You know, because I could just as – your scenario is exactly right. I could see Tampa Bay rolling. I could see New Orleans rolling. I just don't have a good feel for New Orleans. But here's my favorite tweet of the weekend. Can you show this one, Jason, this one? Because all year I've been saying how great. Sean Payton's a great coach. But I just don't buy into the Taysom Hill thing, right? Like, everybody anointed Taysom Hill. Oh, he's just a Swiss Army knife. You do everything with him. And I'm always annoyed by it because the line for me is always – he does everything worse than the player he's replacing. He's not as good a quarterback as Breeze. He's not as good a running back as Kamara. He's not as good a receiver as Thomas. And Tommy Smokes, I don't know if his son's been listening to the show, but he says, I'm watching the game on Nickelodeon with my 3-year-old son, and he just asked, quote, Daddy, why do the Saints insist on forcing the football to Taysom Hill when he doesn't do anything that well, and they have 2 better quarterbacks and 4 to 5 better playmakers on the roster? I'm so proud. It's just exactly how I feel. I don't know if Tommy's very funny. I don't know if that's his son actually said that or if that's Tommy channeling through his child. But
boy, that kid's a prodigy. Yes. Oh, are you kidding me? 3 years old to come up with that? Sign him up for VSiN. Are you kidding me?
Did you catch any of the Nickelodeon broadcast? Probably not, huh?
No, I did not. No.
Jason,
no.
do we have the real quick the Nickelodeon tweets? I mean, the one thing that was cool is that they had young Sheldon explaining. So here's a touchdown where everybody gets slimed. That's an Adam Schefter tweet. And then they do explain, like young Sheldon explained all the calls, which I thought was interesting. And then there was a third one where they kick a field goal and it's like SpongeBob SquarePants big face, which got me to giggle as well. But if I was a child and they had Nickelodeon, I wouldn't have watched the game on Nickelodeon because I was like so serious about football from age 6. I'd have been like, turn this crap off.
I think it's a great idea. They ought to figure out different environments to play around with.
That was definitely the game to do it on, though. Because, boy, was it otherwise. If you didn't have a bet on that Chicago-New Orleans game yesterday, it was unwatchable. This betting thing's going to catch on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, obviously, we had action every game. But, you're right. That was pretty unwatchable. Yeah.
All right. So, in the end, then, as we look back at these 4 games in our final 2 minutes, I think I like, straight up, I like Green Bay the best, giving 7. And then the tease I like the best is Green Bay Baltimore. Basically, what I'm saying is I love Saturday much more than I like Sunday. How about you?
Well, I like the Packers. Like I said, I kind of wanted to open this game 7.5, but I didn't want to mess with it just yet. I like the Bills. I think the Bills are going to beat them. I think they'll beat the Ravens, although I think the public will come in strong on the Ravens. I like Tampa Bay. Plus the 3, but you're cutting it pretty close. I think they win that game. The game I would stay away from is Cleveland and Kansas City. That's a game you know, 10-point favorite. You know, I think that number's dead on. But, you know, I've seen teams lose by less than 10 with never having a chance to win the football game. And I think that could easily happen here. Or Kansas City could just blow them out. I don't know.
How much that 500-plus yards that the Browns gave up do you chalk up to the nature of how that – this is a good question for you. How much of how the game was where Pittsburgh just needed to sling it all game, or how much of that is the Browns just can't stop anybody, period?
Well, I think that's part of it. You know, when the Steelers cut it to 12, you know, I thought, man, are they going to pull this game out? Because, I mean, they were rolling at the time. And I thought, I mean, there was a legitimate chance that they could do it. And part of it was the fact that, Cleveland is having trouble stopping teams, you know. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to stop Kansas City. But does that mean Kansas City wins, you know, 34-26 or 27, something like that? I think, you know, I certainly can see. That's the game I would stay away from if were I on the Megapod and had to stay away from one game. That would be it, that happening very easily. So
yeah, I think a lot of people will agree with you on that. And the more you say it, the more you might be right on that. Christy, I thank you as always. Again, the name of the book, Then One Day. Chris Andrews, everybody. My mishpucha. Thank you, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, Gil.
My favorite.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. My favorite way to start Mondays during football season. Happy to do it through the playoffs as well. Coming back.
Pleasure, Gil.
My favorite.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. My favorite way to start Mondays during football season.